Hiranyakashipu has completed his preaching and pacified his mother Diti and the other relatives of the departed Hiranyaksha, and Diti, as the Bhagavatam explains, forgot her grief over her son's death and engaged her mind and attention in understanding the tattva, the real philosophy, the actual truth. And her grief went away. So after preaching in this wonderful way, Hiranyakashipu, then his mood changed. Immediately, completely. And before he had been preaching about the inevitability of death and using one's life properly and the giving up of lamentation, now he began to perform very heavy austerities. Motivated by the desire to kill Lord Vishnu. Motivation is so important. Hiranyakashipu, in his preaching, in his austerities, was motivated by atheistical, demoniac tendencies which were sitting in the core of his heart. When devotees preach and when they perform austerities, what is motivating them, what is driving them onward, is something completely different. Everything depends on the motivation, the value of something. And although Krishna is so merciful, he takes the best from what we do, still our business is to try our best to purify our heart, which means purifying our motivation. And what is that? It means to act to please Krishna. For no other reason, Nyavi Lasita Sunyam Gyana Kamara Navrita Anukulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakta Uttama. No other desire other than to please Krishna. But that, again, was not the way that Hiranyakashipu's mind was working. So Narada Muni was continuing telling this pastime to Maharaj Yudhisthira. The demoniac king Hiranyakashipu wanted to be unconquerable. So this was his motivation. He wanted to be unconquerable and free from old age and dwindling of the body. He wanted to gain all the yogic perfections like anima, lagima, to be deathless and to be the only king of the entire universe, including Brahmaloka. Practically speaking, although we will hear that he is going to perform his austerities to please Lord Brahma, to exact a benediction or some blessings from Lord Brahma, his mood is to conquer Lord Brahma, conquer the universe, to be the controller of the universe, including Brahmaloka. Prabhupada explains in his purport. Thus self-interested persons, by demoniac austerities, want to even kill their benedictors, where the Vaishnavas want to remain an ever-existing servant of the Lord and never to occupy the post of the Lord. So we can see how even the Sayuja Mukti that's desired by the impersonalist, the merging, the losing the individuality within the Lord, this is so demonic. Because it's at the core of the desire is to become the Lord. To take, usurp the Lord's position, because anything is better than serving the Lord. So even in Patanjali Yoga, the process is to merge, the ultimate goal is to merge with the body of the Lord, to see that they even understand that the Lord has a body, that he is a body. But instead of wishing to serve that body, to serve that individual. They want to become him. So that is actually demonic. Anything but serve the Lord. Therefore, this Sayuja Mukti, or this Mayavad philosophy, is considered the last snare of Maya, the last trap. After one gives up everything else, all enjoyment in the material world, one may still want to become the Lord. So it's Maya's last trap. Anything but service to the Lord. So the devotees, they never want to take the Lord's position. Rather, they wish to remain an ever-existing servant of the Lord and never to occupy the post of the Lord. This is the basic mentality of the devotee. Service. Loving service. Dva ima purusha loke charamakshara imevacha chara savabhutani kutosto akshara uchate. Those who are pure in the spiritual world, they are one with the Lord in desire. They want to please Him. They don't have an independent desire. So this is the prayer of a devotee. O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your servant. This is what I want. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I want to serve you. I've spent so many lifetimes in anxiety with myself as the center, but now I wish to surrender that self, me, unto you and your service. Please engage me in your service. Through Sayuja Mukti, Prabhupada continues, which is generally demanded by asuras, one merges into the existence of the Lord. But although one sometimes thus achieves the goal of the theory of monism, one falls down again to struggle in material existence. So Vaishnava has a different mood. He wants to remain forever a servant. So Hiranyakashipu, not wishing to, with himself, his own self-interest, his own plans to increase his power so he can control more Siddhaham. What's that verse describing the demonic mentality in the Ishwaraham Ahambogi Siddhaham Balavan Sukhi? I am the controller. Ishwaraham Ahambogi. Because without controlling, you can't enjoy. You can't be a bogi and enjoy it. Siddhaham. Without thinking, who is more qualified than myself to control everything? Balavan Zuki, my own power is so great. So this is demonic mentality. So Hiranyakashipu wished to increase that power. So in the valley of Mandara Hill, Hiranyakashipu began performing his austerities by standing with his toes on the ground, keeping his arms upward, and looking toward the sky. Now you can try that sometime and see how long you can last with your toes, standing on your toes, hands upward, and looking upward at the sky. This position was extremely difficult, but he accepted it as a means to attain perfection. I am doing this, was his mentality. This tremendous, painful austerity for your pleasure, O Lord. And who is his Lord? Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe. So by performing austerity, one becomes very powerful. So from the hair on Hiranyakashipu's head, there emanated an effulgent light as brilliant and as intolerable as the rays of the sun at the time of dissolution. So much power. Seeing the performance of such austere penances, the demigods who had been wandering throughout the planet now returned to their respective homes. When the demons began creating disturbances, we had heard in the previous chapter, the demigods wandered around on the earth. But then when Hiranyakashipu, after instructing the demons to do this, he began to perform his austerities and his powers grew, and the demigods came back to their respective homes because their respective homes were being threatened, not just the earth. Because of Hiranyakashipu's severe austerities, fire came from his head, and this fire and its smoke spread throughout the sky, encompassing the upper and lower planets, which all became extremely hot. Because of the power of his severe austerities, all the rivers and oceans were agitated. The surface of the globe with its mountains and islands began trembling, and the stars and planets fell. All directions were ablaze. So he was accumulating so much power. And what was his motive in all this? Just to place himself at the center so he could control and enjoy. Simply selfishness. So many natural occurrences, everything was starting to become topsy-turvy by his power. So scorched and extremely disturbed because of Hiranyakashipu's severe penances, all the demigods left the planets where they resided and went to the planet of Lord Brahma. So they were on earth, they went from the earth to their own planets, and then they went to see Lord Brahma, where they informed the Creator as follows, because Lord Brahma is he's the complaint department, so to speak, for the devas, the demigods. When there's difficulty, they don't approach the Lord directly. They approach him. And through him, if he can't solve the difficulty himself, he approaches the Lord by the ocean of milk and meditates. Lord Shri Daksha Vishnu. So they approached Lord Brahma. They informed the Creator as follows. O Lord of the demigods, O Master of the universe, because of the fire emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head as a result of his severe austerities, we have become so disturbed that we cannot stay in our planets, but we have come to you. O great person, chief of the universe, if you think it proper, kindly stop these disturbances meant to destroy everything before all your obedient subjects are annihilated. Hiranyakashipu has undertaken a most severe type of austerity. Although his plan is not unknown to you, kindly listen as we submit his intentions. So they understood what was on his mind. And they understood that Lord Brahma also understood what was on Hiranyakashipu's mind, but they were going to tell Lord Brahma how this man was thinking. Because in this world, many people do difficult things. They work so hard. They perform incredible austerities, not as incredible as Hiranyakashipu's, but austerity basically means forsaking, undergoing difficulty, forsaking temporary pleasures to gain some long-range plan. And to execute one's plan, one needs power. So by performing austerities, one gets power. And often, even in today's governments, well, not today's governments, but when there's a revolution going on and someone goes to jail for the cause of the revolution or to improve society. So when he comes out of jail, he's very powerful and everyone considers him a great hero because he has performed these austerities. So Hiranyakashipu is performing austerities. But what was motivating him to do this, to do such difficult things? Put the pleasures that we all so much like, the comforts of life, casting them aside. People do that. They work and work and work, don't eat, don't sleep, their minds are just focused, no enjoyment, to gain money, to gain power, to gain control. Now what was motivating Hiranyakashipu? Sages and sadhus forsake their comforts to gain spiritual realization. Was this what was motivating Hiranyakashipu? Hardly. He wanted to evoke Lord Brahma to come down so he could say, so Lord Brahma could understand that he has done this, undergone so much hardship just to please me. What does he want? And Lord Brahma would feel like, I want to give him what he wants. He has done all this to please me. This is how the devotee works. I may have my plans, my desires, but to please my Guru Maharaj, to please Prabhupada, to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our Acharyas, I will forsake my own convenience to please Krishna. This way, Krishna and the Vaishnavas, Prabhupada Guru. And then by their mercy, I advance. There's so many stories in the Upanishads like this. There was once one brahmachari student, and he, his guru, it was raining and the fields were getting flooded. So the way that the farming is done in India, they build up the mud on the sides of a small plot of land, and that captures the water. So he said, you protect the water from escaping, because if the water is there, then they plant rice and all the crops, all the irrigation is there. Protect the boundaries, the walls, so that the water will stay, protect the water. So he went out in the rain, but the rain was, and the winds and everything was so strong that the wall, the mud wall, fell apart. It disintegrated in the rain, and there wasn't enough mud there to stop the water, and the water was rushing out. So he was thinking, the brahmachari was thinking, that my guru instructed me to protect the water, and what am I going to do? There's not enough mud, and the rain is falling. So what he did is he put his own body there, and in this way he protected the water. And he stayed there for hours and hours and hours, just protecting the water like that. And the guru, after a while, noticed that the brahmachari disciple wasn't there. Stayed perhaps the whole night there. And then the next morning, the guru went to look for him, and he saw him. He said, "Why? What are you doing lying down there?" And he said, "You told me to protect the water, and I'm doing this. By all means possible, following your instructions." He didn't say this, but undergoing so much inconvenience myself. Because what's the first thing that happens? First, the inconvenience starts when you're doing something like that. The physical inconvenience. And then what happens next? Huh? Why is he asked me to do this? The mind starts rebelling and acting up and criticizing, etc. And saying, no one else is doing it. There are so many others. On and on and on. Making so many reasons just to, really at the heart of all the reasons is just to avoid the inconvenience in the mind. The intelligence starts making up all these excuses and reasons. So finally the guru came out and he saw he wasn't like that at all. He was saying, "You told me to do it," and he was so pleased, and he benedicted him. And by the mercy of the guru, all the Vedic knowledge became revealed in his heart. There's other stories like that too of expert disciples who were so committed and determined and so strong and fixed. There was another Upanishadic story there was one disciple who was, he was herding the cows, and the guru had something he told him. Oh yes, he told him to go out begging, but there was no food, so he took some of the food that he had begged for the guru. So after a few days, He saw that the disciple came back and he wasn't hungry and he wasn't famished in any way, wasn't getting thin. So he said, "How are you sustaining yourself?" And he said, "Well, I'm eating some of what I'm getting and giving it to you." He said, "No, that's not proper. First you should deliver everything to the guru." I said, "Okay." So he brought everything that he begged to the guru at that time. So he had, the guru wasn't giving him any food, and he asked, but he saw that the disciple wasn't getting thin at all. So he said, how is it that you're not getting thin, and how come you're not famished? So he said, "Well, the cows are out there, so I squeeze the milk from their udder, and I drink a little of that. I drink some of that." And he said, "No, this isn't proper. You should take your food when it's offered." So he said, "Okay." So he went out begging, and he brought everything back, and he wasn't taking any food like that, and the guru wasn't feeding him, and he was getting completely famished, and he was so hungry and weak that he fell into a ditch. And the guru saw him, and by his mercy, and he went blind because of his lack of nourishment. He went blind even and fell into a big hole. And the guru, by the guru's blessings, his sight was restored, and all knowledge he understood by the grace, Vedic knowledge by the grace of the guru. So austerities can be there, but what is the motivation? And how strong one's mind has to be. So here is what was motivating Hiranyakashipu. The demigods are going to explain this. And it wasn't anything good. The supreme person within this universe, Lord Brahma, this is what the demigods are saying, has gotten his exalted post by dint of severe austerities, mystic power, and trance. Consequently, after creating the universe, he has become the most worshipable deity within it. Since I am eternal and time is eternal, I shall endeavor for such austerities, mystic power, and trance for many, many births. And thus I shall occupy the same post occupied by Lord Brahma. So, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, he was taking knowledge. I'm eternal. He was already explaining this and preaching this. But see how he's using this knowledge. I'm eternal. And that means I take birth after birth. Lord Brahma has gained his position by practicing great austerities. Now, I can't live as long as Lord Brahma. But what I'll do is maintain this incredibly intense desire to practice austerities and gain power, and in this way gain piety. So I'll do this birth after birth, because when one has a deep desire, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam chajanyante kalevaram, then Krishna reciprocates with that. That desire sits in the subtle body, and one will take a birth that allows him to fulfill that desire. So he thought, I can't in one birth accumulate so much piety to gain the position of Brahma, but it will take me many births, but I'm eternal, time is eternal, and I have many births. So I'm going to do this. So what an incredible display of determination on one hand, but can also say a foolishness, because we'll hear later that when he becomes so powerful, he can't even be satisfied, because no matter how much things that we think will satisfy us that we have on the material level, it's not possible for a soul in the material world, in the illusory material world, to be satisfied. But what determination! This was what was on his mind. I'll gain so much piety for my austerities, I'll take over the position of Brahma. Text 11. By dint of my severe austerities, by my power, I shall reverse the results of pious and impious activities. I'm going to make everything opposite. There is a law that governs the world. I'm going to change it. Make the universe work differently the way I want. I shall overturn all the established practices within this world. Even Dhruvaloka, Vaikuntha, eternal planets. Dhruvaloka will be vanquished at the end of the millennium. I'll change everything. Therefore, what is the use of it? I shall prefer to remain in the position of Brahma. I'll stay there and be the controlling deity of the entire universe. So what did he want to do? He wanted to use his power to place himself in the position of the controller. And then what would he do with all that control and once he was in that position? So Prabhupada explains in his purport that he's going to harass everyone and give everyone trouble, especially the demigods, because he, as an asura, was inimical with the demigods, naturally. And also, his conclusion was that his brother was killed because the demigods took help of Lord Vishnu. So he's going to kill Lord Vishnu and harass the demigods. And he wanted everyone who had the tendency to be pious to get bad results from that and be miserable, because piety elevates us in goodness and brings happiness. So he's going to change the law that instead of becoming happy by piety, you'll become miserable and get back at all those pious people. So what would one term someone who has those kind of thoughts? What would you call him? So envious, incredibly envious. And those who are bad, like his demonic friends, by their bad activities, they'll become happy and pious. How could he do all these things? Enact his envious policies? He'd have to, and harass those who he wanted to harass. He would do that by changing the laws of nature. So this is what the demigods are saying to Lord Brahma. This is what this man is doing. And he's gaining power. O Lord, we have heard from reliable sources that in order to obtain your post, Hiranyakashipu is now engaged in severe austerity. You are the master of the three worlds. Please, without delay, take whatever steps you deem appropriate. In other words, stop him. Stop him. Prabhupada's purport. In the material world, a servant is provided for by the master, but is always planning how to capture the master's post. There have been many instances of this in history, especially in India during the Muhammadan rule. Many servants, by plans and devices, took over the posts of their masters. It is learned from Chaitanya Charitamrita that one big Jamindar, Subhuti Rai, kept a Mohammedan boy as a servant. This is described there. Of course, he treated the boy as his own child, and sometimes when the boy would steal something, the master would chastise him by striking him with a cane. There was a mark on the boy's back from this chastisement. Later, after that boy had by crooked means become Hussein Shah, Nawab of Bengal, he became that servant boy whom Subhuti Roy had chastised and beaten, became the ruler of Bengal. This is all history. And Rupin Sanatan was serving under this Nawab Hussein Shah. So one day, while he was the Nawab, his wife saw the mark on his back and inquired about it. The Nawab replied that in his childhood he had been a servant of Subhuti Rai, who had punished him because of some mischievous activities. Upon hearing this, the Nawab's wife immediately became agitated and requested her husband to kill Subhuti Rai. Nawab Hussein Shah, of course, was very grateful to Subhuti Rai and therefore refused to kill him. But when his wife requested him to turn Subhuti Rai into a Mohammedan, the Nawab agreed. Taking some water from his water pot, he sprinkled it upon Subhuti Rai and declared that Subhuti Rai had now become a Mohammedan. The point is that this Nawab had been an ordinary menial servant of Subhuti Rai, but was somehow or other able to occupy the supreme post of Nawab of Bengal. This is the material world. Everyone is trying to become master through various devices, although everyone is servant of his senses. Following this system, a living entity, although servant of his senses, tries to become master of the whole universe. Hiranyakashipu is a typical example of this, and Brahma was informed by the demigods of his intentions. So everyone in this world wants to become master, except pure devotees who want to become not only servants, but the servant of the servant of the servant. This is their aspiration. So very, very rare is devotional service, because the false ego has to be completely removed. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, we heard about the creation of the universe. And the thing that starts everything working, practically speaking, is false ego. This is the core of the conditioned living entities, the core of his being placed in the material world and remaining in the material world. He has a false ego, which means that he wants to be the master, the Lord. And real ego means we want to serve Krishna. So the demigods continue speaking to Brahma. Oh Lord Brahma, your position within this universe is certainly most auspicious for everyone, especially the cows and brahmanas. So your being in charge of the universe brings so the Brahmins and the cows are flourishing because you are in charge. Brahminical culture and the protection of cows can be increasingly glorified, and thus all kinds of material happiness, opulence, and good fortune will automatically increase. But unfortunately, if Hiranyakashipu occupies your seat, everything will be lost. So they're trying to inspire Lord Brahma to action by saying that the things that you value most, this Brahminical culture and cow protection, if he gets in charge, if this demon takes over your position, that which you value, which you protect, which you nourish and nurture, it is going to be completely ruined. Prabhupada's purport, we'll read from about the middle of it. If a rakshasa or demon was situated in Brahma's post, then the entire arrangement of the universe, especially the protection of the Brahminical culture and cows, would be ruined. All the demigods anticipated that danger, and therefore they went to request Lord Brahma to take immediate steps to thwart Hiranyakashipu's plan. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma was attacked by two demons, Maru and Kaitabha, but Krishna saved him. Therefore, Krishna is addressed as Maru Kaitabhantri, the killer of Maru and Kaitabha. Now again, Hiranyakashipu is trying to replace Brahma. The material world is so situated that even in the position of Lord Brahma, not to speak of ordinary living entities, is sometimes in danger. Nonetheless, until the time of Hiranyakashipu, no one had tried to replace Lord Brahma. Hiranyakashipu, however, was such a great demon that he maintained this ambition. We're all little demons. We want to have our own little place where we're the Lord and the controller. But Hiranyakashipu is a superior demon, and therefore Prahlad would never, he wouldn't even call him father, he would call him Suryavajo. Suryavajitam tat sarumanye suravajitam. That you are the best of all the asuras. Best of asura really means the worst of all living entities. The most demonic, the most envious. So Prabhupada explains that there are so many little Hiranyakashipus in charge of contemporary society, and they give trouble, they kill the cows, and they have no respect for Brahminical culture, any culture born of goodness. Rather, they want the people to be culturing ignorance and passion. So how did Lord Brahma respond? O King, Sukadeva Goswami said to Prakrit Maharaj, being thus informed by the demigods, the most powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by Bhrigu, Daksha and other great sages, immediately started for the place where Hiranyakashipu was performing his penances and austerities. So he was performing such heavy austerities. And Brahma naturally wanted to benedict him with something, according to what Hiranyakashipu desired. So he went there. Lord Brahma, who was carried by a swan airplane, at first could not see where Hiranyakashipu was. Because Hiranyakashipu's body, for Hiranyakashipu's body was covered by an antel and by grass and bamboo sticks. So the ants had eaten him and created a big anthill over him. He had been there for so long, and so much grass and bamboo had grown. He had been performing austerities for so long. Because Hiranyakashipu had been there for a long time, the ants had devoured his skin, fat, flesh, and blood. So how determined he was. With the first ant bite, we would run. The mind would say, why are you here? There are so many other ways to be happy. But he was so determined and so tolerant. But it was for all the wrong reasons. Because Hiranyakashipu had been there for a long time, the ants had devoured his skin, fat, flesh, and blood. Then Lord Brahma and the demigods spotted him. They couldn't find him at first, he was so covered. Resembling a cloud-covered sun, heeding all the world by his austerities, struck with wonder, Lord Brahma began to smile and then addressed him as follows. We'll read the first paragraph. The living entity can live merely by his own power, without the help of skin, marrow, bone, blood, and so on. Because it is said, asangoyam purusha, the living entity has nothing to do with the material covering, actually. The soul is not the body. So the living entity remains alive, regardless. So there's no connection, actually. So he can live by his own power. The living entity has nothing to do with the material covering. Hiranyakashipu performed a severe type of tapasya, austerity, for many long years. Indeed, it is said that he performed the tapasya for 100 heavenly years. Since one day of the demigods equals 6 of our months, certainly this was a very long time, 18,000 years, earth years. By nature's own way, his body had been almost consumed by earthworms, ants, and other parasites, and therefore even Brahma was at first unable to see him. Later, however, Brahma could ascertain where Hiranyakashipu was, and Brahma was struck with wonder to see Hiranyakashipu's extraordinary power to execute tapasya. Incredible determination and power. Such focus, mind, mentality. Anyone would conclude upon seeing him that Hiranyakashipu was dead, because his body was covered in so many ways. It was eaten on one side and covered, eaten by the ants and bugs and worms, and covered by an anthill. couldn't be seen. So everyone thought he was dead because his body was covered. But Lord Brahma, the supreme living being in this universe, could understand that Hiranyakashipu was alive but covered by material elements. So despite his austerities, because of his motivation was so demonic, he was considered a demon. Nothing but a demon. A big one, but an asura, despite his austerities. So again, it's the motivation that gives value to one's activities. And again, we should try to make our motivation as pure as we can. So Lord Brahma saw Hiranyakashipu. He came down from his flower, his swan airplane, and he began to speak. O son of Kasyapa Muni, please get up. Please get up. All good fortune unto you. You are now perfect in the performance of your austerities, and therefore I may give you a benediction. You may now ask from me whatever you desire, and I shall try to fulfill your wish. I've been very much astonished to see your endurance. In spite of being eaten and bitten by all kinds of worms and ants, you are keeping your life air circulating within your bones. Certainly, this is wonderful. Even saintly persons like Bhrigu was with him, born previously, could not perform such severe austerities, nor will anyone in the future be able to do so. Who within these three worlds can sustain his life without even drinking water for 100 celestial years? My dear son of Diti, with your great determination and austerity, you have done what was impossible even for great saintly persons, and thus I have certainly been conquered by you. So Lord Brahma was touched deeply that you have done this to please me. And therefore, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, that his austerities were so great that Lord Brahma agreed to be conquered by him. In that he said, okay, what do you want? I shall try my best, according to my power, to give you what you want. I will fulfill your desires. O best of the asuras, for this reason I am now prepared to give you all benedictions according to your desire. I belong to the celestial world of the demigods, who do not die like human beings. Therefore, although you are subject to death, your audience with me will not go in vain. So he's telling him indirectly, I can give you so many benedictions, but you are subject to death. Demigods also die, but not in the same way you do. But you are subject to death. So he's indirectly telling him that I can give you so many benedictions, but there is one I cannot give you, and that is to make you immortal. Even Lord Brahma dies. How could one give another what one himself doesn't have? If I have $10, I can give you at most $10. I cannot give you 11, what to speak of 100,000 million. So one who is not deathless cannot award deathlessness. So Narada Muni continued describing this amazing pastime. After speaking these words to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Brahma, the original being of this universe, who is extremely powerful, sprinkled transcendental, infallible, spiritual water from his kamadalu, from his water pot, upon Hiranyakashipu's body, which had been eaten away by ants and moths. So there was nothing left of his body, so he sprinkled it with this water. And thus he enlivened Hiranyakashipu. As soon as he was sprinkled with the water from Lord Brahma's water pot, Hiranyakashipu arose. His body was restored. His body, endowed with a full body, with limbs so strong by the potency of this transcendental water. With limbs so strong, they could bear the striking of a thunderbolt. With physical strength and a bodily luster resembling molten gold, he emerged from the anthill a completely young man, just as fire springs from fuel wood. Only if he had such determination to love Krishna, only if we had a billionth of his determination to take over Brahma's position, and only if we had a small part of that to love Krishna, how easily and quickly we would attain our desire by Krishna's mercy. But Aranyakashipu was very determined, and he has taken a great step towards fulfilling his demonic ambition. He has received the promise of Lord Brahma that he will grant him what he wanted, what he wants. Seeing Lord Brahma present before him in the sky, so he's brought to life again, his body is brought to life, so powerful now is his body. Carried by his swan airplane, Aranyakashipu was extremely pleased. He immediately fell flat with his head on the ground and began to express his obligation to the Lord. We'll read the last part of Prabhupada's purport. Although Aranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, he was strongly inimical to Lord Vishnu. So he wanted benediction from Lord Brahma, basically to be able to kill Vishnu. This is the symptom of an asura. Asuras worship the demigods as being separate from the Lord, not knowing that all the demigods are powerful because of being servants of the Lord. If the Supreme Lord were to withdraw the powers of the demigods would no longer be able to offer benedictions to their worshippers. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee or asura is that a devotee knows that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone derives power from him. Whatever power anyone has, whatever ability, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the ability in man. It is Krishna's gifting that person, empowering that person. Without worshipping the demigods for particular powers, a devotee worships Lord Vishnu, knowing that if he desires a particular power, he can get that power while acting as Lord Vishnu's devotee. Therefore, in the Shastra Bhagavatam 2.3.10, it is recommended a kama savakamava moksha kama daradi tivrena bhakti yogeni ajaita purusha para. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Even if a person has material desires, instead of worshipping the demigods, he should pray to the Supreme Lord so that his connection with the Supreme Lord will be established and he will be saved from becoming a demon or non-devotee. In this regard, Sri Madhvacharya gives the following quotation from the Brahmatarka. Ekas tanaikakar yatvad Vishnu pradanyatas tata jivasyata radina tvam na bina dikrat kritam vacha. Since Vishnu is the Supreme, by worshipping Vishnu, one can fulfill all of one's desires. There is no need to divert one's attention to any demigod. Then, Aranyakashipu had paid his full obeisances. Again, he paid obeisances, he performs austerity to please another, but his motivations are so demonic. They're abominable. And what he wants is abominable. So he gets up from his obeisances. He gets up from the ground and seeing Lord Brahma before him, the head of the Daitya, meaning the head of the Daitya family, was overwhelmed by jubilation. He was so happy. With tears in his eyes, his whole body shivering, he began praying in a humble mood with folded hands and a faltering voice to satisfy Lord Brahma. So one might even think that he's devotional, he's soft-hearted, he's crying, he offered his obeisances, his body is shivering, his voice was faltering, but it's all to fulfill his inappropriate demonic desires. So tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we shall hear some of the very kind and flattering words of Hiranyakashipu to Lord Brahma, where he worships Lord Brahma practically as if he was God. His words are describing God. But his motivation is thinking himself God, the center of existence, he whom everyone else should worship. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.